Two things happened yesterday. President Obama held the first White House cybersecurity summit, actually that was last week, and pushed for greater information sharing with an executive order. But he went to Silicon Valley to do that. And the Federal Aviation Administration published rules for the use of small unmanned aircraft. Those came out over the weekend. Well, Jonathan Aberman is chairman of the venture capital firm Amplifier Ventures and founder of the nonprofit Tandem NSI. He stopped to talk about these new FAA regulations and the executive order and some of the industry that exists right here in the D.C. region concerning those two events.
The drone industry here in D.C. and actually nationally has been waiting for a while now to find out whether the FAA was going to let people who were not trained pilots actually operate drones. And while it would seem to be counterintuitive, you think, well, after all, why do you have to be a pilot to fly a remote airplane? The FAA rules were long coming. So it took, I think, about 2 years. But the good news is that below the 500 feet ceiling, you will be able to fly drones within line of sight and operate businesses. And that will provide opportunities for further development of the drone industry. And I think ultimately a way to develop autonomy. But there are a couple of things to remember that I think are important. The first one is you won't be able to operate the drones over people. So the idea of being over density or starting to see them used as cameras for crowds, we're not there yet. And the second one is it doesn't really address probably the biggest national security issue. In fact, something that I've had a number of national security officials specify, which is how are you going to defend against the possibility that now you've got these drones that, you know, basically could deliver threats or engage in surveillance quite innocently, perhaps. It's a very significant opportunity and threat at the same time for our entrepreneurs.
Because it sounds like it's something the government itself is going to be engaging in because the White House issued rules on privacy and so forth for government-operated drones and coming out the same day as the FAA rules.
Sure.
So my question is, will the federal government contract out operation of these light drones? And so what will the White House rules on privacy, what are the implications for operators that might be contractors?
Well, what's really interesting about technology in general is that what we've seen consistently over the last 15 years, last 10 in particular, is that the entrepreneur's ability to think of new ways to do things in tech, say drones or autonomous cars, for example, generally outpaced the government's ability to react, particularly when Congress is so dysfunctional with the executive. So a couple of things. First of all, as we've learned in Tandem NSI, we're investing a fair bit of time working with the local autonomy and drone community. In fact, we're having a demo event on the 3rd of March where we're going to be showing off a fair number of interesting companies. It's inevitable that the private sector will be involved with the government and a lot of the technology that the government uses for surveillance, national security, protection, and so forth will be supplied by the private sector. In fact, that's generally the way it works with government, private sector, national security.
Now, the FAA rules specified those drones that are under 55 pounds. What is the significance of 55 pounds?
I think that basically what they're trying to do is separate something that might, in fact, be a real threat because it would carry, say, a payload. They don't say it that way, but if a drone is of a certain weight class, it would have enough aeronautics to be able to carry a package of explosives or something else like that. Below 55, I think there's a sense that there's not enough lift to provide more than, say, a privacy challenge or a type of threat that would be, to use national security terms, a survivable threat. I think it was probably that more than anything else.
Because the drones that are commonly thought of or pictured in all of these scenarios are the helicopter type ones, which can hover and go very slowly and go vertically up and down.
Sure.
But a lot of drones are airplane-like and
absolutely.
Go in a straight line and a lot faster and a lot more distance can be covered quickly. And
well, so drones cover everything up through with predators. I mean, you now have a global hawk. I mean, what we're effectively having now is for those of us that are sci-fi fans, the Terminator and the flying robots is actually closer than you think. But you're absolutely right. There are airplanes and similar gliders and so forth. But the point is that, again, technology is always pushing because that's what technologists do. I saw over the weekend, and maybe a number of listeners did as well, Apple is working on a driverless car. I can only imagine how you're going to be able to drive a car without any controls. So obviously, that's the way it'll be a little clicker wheel or something. But the social and political implications of driverless cars, I don't think anybody's really thought about. I mean, we're in a country where people argue about the ability to protect gun rights. I can only imagine what it's going to be like when somebody's told you can't actually drive your own car anymore.
Well, getting back to more more practical matters on the drone industry. You mentioned there is, in fact, one developing in and around Washington.
Absolutely. One of the great things about the Tandem NSI initiative that I've been running, because it's publicly funded, we have a real white hat, and we're able to work with the agencies and local entrepreneurs in new ways. There's a DC drone community here that's about 1,500 individuals strong. There's an Internet of Things community that's large maker communities. There are thousands of people that are innovators here in town that are not involved in national security and largely invisible to them. And they may, in fact, be our secret weapon, forgive the term, when we look at the DC's ability to withstand the onslaught of areas like Silicon Valley, so that we can compete in national security. Again, you just want to stress, you know, we had an event a couple of weeks ago where we brought in folks from a number of the agencies to talk about what they were looking for in the way of drone technology, DHS, DARPA, CITSO, and a few others. And as a result of that, we're having a show and tell event on the 3rd of March at the Artisphere, where we're going to be bringing in various innovators in town. You're just going to show off the things doing, and people from universities, Mason, VTech, Applied Research Lab, and APL over at Hopkins. It's going to be a lot of fun, but more importantly, it shows the depth of what's going on here.
And can you see possibly some of these upstart suppliers becoming partnered with some of these traditional integrators to be able to, one, have an avenue for revenue and give the integrators a new capability for whatever the government might
it's
seek?
It's really interesting. So there, at the moment, the best way for non-traditional innovators to interact with the government is undoubtedly be sub to an integrator, to be bought by the integrator. What's fascinating, though, is that at the moment, a number of the agencies that are interested in areas like autonomy and drones and Internet of Things and other advanced technologies are starting to think about ways to engage more directly with non-traditional performers. This is something you and I have talked about in the past. And the other thing to bear in mind is many non-traditional performers are very distrustful of government contractor community. They are afraid if they interact with them, they will lose their IP or lose their ability to contract. And frankly, as somebody who's reviewed more than my fair share of contracts, the non-compete clauses and so forth, if you're not familiar with them, can be really intimidating. So what I think right now is really interesting and important about our region is that we're at a moment in time where the integrator community is starting to realize that they need to engage non-traditional performers the way they like to be engaged. For example, Booz Allen doing now 1776, for example, and in different ways, and Lockheed Martin and others participated in Tandem NSI. I think they're getting more sophisticated about that at the same time that the agency is starting to think more directly about it. So my view is that what we will see over the next 6 to 12 months is, you mentioned drones, I think that a number of the interesting drone and autonomy startups and entrepreneurs, innovators that I see will either interact on a research basis directly with the agencies to develop new tech because there's a big need, or they will interact with the integrator community. But I expect if all goes well, 2 to 3 years from now, we'll be looking at autonomy and drones and similar robotics technologies and talking about that startup community the way we now talk about the cyber community. I think it's a big opportunity.
Jonathan Aberman is the chairman of Amplifier Ventures and founder of Tandem NSI. And I wanted to also ask you that we've mentioned Silicon Valley a couple of times. That's where the president went for his big do on cybersecurity, and it turned out to be really a privacy discussion more than a cybersecurity discussion.
Well, I think it's really fascinating. If you look at the administration and what happened in the State of the Union with the president talking about the need for there being greater coordination between DHS and the other agencies and the private sector, and then also the announcement of the Cyber Threat Intelligence Integration Center, it's clear that this administration understands that the crossover between public and private industry and national security is profound. What we saw with Sony, for example, with the North Koreans, what we saw with Anthem Healthcare losing their credentials and so forth. National security is basically blurring to a private function. Having said that, there are a couple of things. First of all, I'm pretty disappointed as somebody who lives and breathes DC tech, particularly government DC tech, that with all the great resources that are here, the president decided to get an airplane and go to Silicon Valley to talk about integrating with the private sector, where there are all these great resources here. And
complimented them on the weather.
Yeah, well, compliment on the weather, but you know, my phone number is in the book, President Obama. Please give me a call. The Tandem NSI community and the broader DC community wants to interact with you. The second thing I would say is, yes, it became a conversation on privacy, and frankly, I'm going to tell you the truth, I found it to be a very hypocritical conversation. Because on the one hand, you had the leaders of Google and Facebook protest and not attend the event, which I thought was counterproductive. And then you had Tim Cook from Apple talk about the importance of the government protecting private interest and privacy. And what bothers me about that is that Silicon Valley gets a free pass because they collect so much more data about you and me and everybody that's listening and our intent and the things that we do. We're basically rats in a maze that they design. And it just, you know what? Privacy is everybody's responsibility. The private sector does not get a pass because they were able to point at the government and say, you guys are bad.